also hear from Francis again tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air at 3:30 on this week's edition of Interval, profiles of jazz musicians focusing on their out-of-print jazz recordings. If you'd like to write Francis or any of our other contributors on Fresh Air, our address is Fresh Air, WUHY, Independence Mall West, 150 North 6th Street, Philadelphia, 19106. It's now 2 minutes after 4, and this is Fresh Air on WUHY-FM in Philadelphia. Tonight on CBS affiliates across the country and here in Philadelphia on Channel 10, there's going to be a movie on called Nurse, and that is the movie based on the best-selling book by Philadelphia-based author Peggy Anderson. In about a half hour on Fresh Air, we'll be hearing from Peggy Anderson, and she'll tell us about the writing of her book, Nurse. Next week, on April 15th and 16th, a two-part made-for-television movie will be broadcast on CBS affiliates called Guiana Tragedy, The Story of Jim Jones. The movie follows Jim Jones from his childhood to the final moments of the mass suicide that he led. With me is the star of the movie, Powers Booth, who portrays Jim Jones. In the recent edition of Time magazine, which just came out, Frank Rich wrote this about the movie. It says, a young actor named Powers Booth captures all the paranoia, sexual magnetism, hysteria, rage, and even intelligence of Dad Jim Jones. His final incantations to the dying, delivered in a feverish but strangely disembodied voice, create a more deathly mood than all the corpses piling up on screen. If writer Tidyman had only matched Booth's talent with a complexly written role, Guiana Tragedy would be as notable a drama as it is a ratings gambit. That was written by Frank Rich in the recent edition of Time magazine. This movie also features Ned Beatty, Colleen Dewhurst, LeVar Burton, and James Earl Jones. Powers Booth has appeared on television in The Plutonium Incident and in the series Skag. He appeared in the recent film The Goodbye Girl and is also known for his performance on Broadway in Lone Star Private Wars. Powers Booth, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hi.
What kind of opportunity is it for an actor to be offered a part playing the most demonic character in recent history?
Well, it's always a controversial opportunity. I must say, when I was first approached with it, I had misgivings, and my friend said, gosh, you don't want to play that. You don't want to play that guy. But knowing that this is important an issue and the number one news story in the world and all that, when I began to check into it, and they gave me the script, and I don't agree with Frank Rich about Ernest's script. It could have been a lot different, a lot worse. I had such an emotional reaction to the material, to tell this story, that it became quite obvious to me that I really, if they were going to give me the opportunity, that I had to play it. For many reasons. It's, as an actor, it was tremendously challenging. And it wasn't your, let's say it's not your normal cup of tea, this guy.
As soon as the story broke, everyone knew that there were going to be all kinds of opportunities to market the Guiana tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do to check this out and to make sure that you weren't going to be uncomfortable with it as a sensationalistic piece?
Well, great question. If the script and therefore the movie had dealt mostly with the perversions that were involved, the mass suicide itself. In other words, if the major portion of the movie had dealt with those things, to me that would have been sensationalism. I can't talk today. Exploitation or something like that. But everyone, you see, it did not. And everyone knows about the suicide. Everyone knows the end, but no one knows the beginning. No one knows who this man was, how he got there, who the people were who followed him, and why they followed him. That's important to us.
One of the problems with many made-for-television movies and other movies that are based on real incidents and real people is that you go to the movie thinking that you're going to find out the true story of how someone got to mm-hmm. be where they are. And what you end up with is truth mixed with fiction and a lot of mm-hmm. imagination. So mm-hmm. you walk away not knowing what's real and what's just a good idea on the part of a screenwriter. Did you check out all the information about Jones' background?
Yeah, as much as possible. I mean, I did a lot of research. There is a lot of material available. From the New West articles which broke to expose him, to books that have been recently published. You know, there were a lot of quickie books that came out right after the incident. But later, while we were filming in December, it seemed that each week a new book by either a member of the temple or someone who had defected came out. So that material was, it was easy to check up and say, okay, this is fact and that's fiction. And truthfully, the man's history was colorful enough and he was charismatic enough himself that you didn't have to write a lot of fiction. For instance, in the end of the film, the things that that I say to talk them into taking the potion are exactly what he said. I mean, he recorded it. He had a tape recording. The voice incantations that I do, I tried not to copy him exactly, but certainly to catch as much of it as possible.
Do you feel like you have a strong resemblance to Jim Jones, physical resemblance?
Oh, I think he was shorter than I am. I think there's, well, he was dark and had dark eyes. They emphasized my cheeks and they did some things with my eyes to make me look more like him. When I studied the films of him, there's about 5 or 6 hours of documentary footage. I tried to catch his center so that I could, the physical posturings I could use would be the same, or gestures that he used in the pulpit, speech patterns, attitudes generally that I could get right from him.
Do you feel that there are aspects of his personality and of his demonism that came through, that was expressed in his body and either his posture or the expression on his face? And did you try to capture that yourself?
He would, yes, he would, in the things I saw him on in the pulpit, he would, one time he would be very erect and very protective. It was like one statement he said, you can say anything you want to say about me, but you're not going to say anything about my people. This is a sacred congregation here. But if you want to go outside and turn the cameras on, I'll tell you right straight from the shoulder where I stand. So in other words, he had this very father protective thing. And the next time you might see him, he would be slumped over it in very sensual kinds of poses. He used the microphone, he used the sunglasses to hide behind. He was very sexy.
What did you do to communicate that sexiness?
Well, I hope that I have some sensuality in myself that I could bring to use my own. What did I do that he did? I just tried to center in on his power, because the power that he had was what made him both charismatic and sensual. I talked to a lady by chance. I was coming back on a plane from Atlanta who had gone to one of the services. And of course, I quizzed her as much as I could about it. And she said it was the most religious experience she'd ever had in her life. The people, she said it was a complete cross-section of society, racially and financially. The music was wonderful. Excuse me. And I said, well, what about him? Tell me about him. And she said it was as if he was 7 feet tall. And he was handsome and spoke wonderfully. He never mentioned God. She said his posture, it was elevated. He was, he thought of himself as a god, as a special person. He also was a wonderful manipulator, and it was planned, a lot of it. A charlatan or a chameleon, he could turn in a moment. A wonderful actor.
Is that something that you can do with your eyes or with your face?
I hope so. I mean, I've been working at it a long time to get to where I can use this instrument that is me to perform well.
Let's talk about his speech patterns a little bit. You had tapes to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Did you try to almost psychoanalyze his speech patterns and try to get a sense of how the way he spoke revealed more about his personality?
Yeah, a little bit, because if you look at the tapes, the transcripts, just the words there, it doesn't really make a logical sense. Or you could analyze it any way you wanted to, but if you hear him say it, if this goes back a little to the thing you were talking about, fiction and as opposed to reality, if I were a writer and I was asked to write this incident, there is no way in the world that I could come up with it the way it actually happened, because reality is much more devastating than fiction, and certainly in this case. But if you hear him say these things, you can tell that he's drugged, he's on drugs a bit. You can tell the paranoia, but you also hear the master manipulator, because he starts it off like a martyr. He says, we can't go back. They won't, let me say, I get it right. He says, we can't go back. They won't leave us alone. They're now going back to get more congressmen, which means more lies, and there's no way that we can survive. So it's like a martyr. I've tried the best I could to give you a good life, and now there's nothing else that we can do. I think, so he says, my opinion is you be kind to children, you be kind to seniors, and you take the potion like they did in ancient Greece, and you step over quietly. Later on, the kind of ranting came in. He said, I strongly maintain to lay down your burdens. I'm going to lay mine down. Shall we lay them down by the riverside, down by the side of Guyana? Here, what's the difference? You know, so you get the kind of willingness to die, paranoia coming through, the jumping from one pattern to another. And even with that, he would be very loud, and then he would come back to quiet, seductive patterns.
Did you have to have an analysis in your head of when he was in control and when he was losing control of what he was saying and doing?
Well, I guess I did, but I didn't really think of it in those terms. You know, when you're playing a role, you can't be sitting there analyzing it in your head. You're doing it, and you're believing it. And after I had studied all the material and seen him on the screen and put it all together, I had images, certain images that just would turn me on to where he was at. In the tape, he says, one of the things that I always would go back to was when he says, they're going to shoot those people. He says, I didn't tell them to do it, but I know they're going to do it, and it's just as plain as I know how to tell you, and I've never lied to you. I have never lied to you. So the thing about I've never lied to you, which, shall we say, is understatement of the year. I mean, all the man did was lie to them for years. But anyone who is lying or is, quote, evil, you don't play evil, or you don't play lying, you don't play insanity. You think you're sane, you think you're telling the truth, you think, you know, so that's where my head was.
So you... You played it as someone who believed in what they were doing.
Absolutely. Because he did believe in what he was doing. Even if he was manipulating you. He believed that he was manipulating you for a purpose. The classic example of the end justifies the means. If for the greater good of the cause, I have to take your money, then I have to take your money. Now, how I get it doesn't matter.
The tapes of the... suicide caused such a stir when they were found. I remember mm-hmm. some people were going to market it and then decided, well, that wouldn't be a very good idea.
No.
There were questions about should this be broadcast or not. A lot of people have heard the tape, though. Did you have to maintain a real verisimilitude with that tape since people have heard it?
Yeah, but I would venture to say that not that many people remember it, or else they just heard portions of it. They didn't hear the whole thing. I tried to, if nothing else, for historical factors, to stay with it, to do what he did. Because I didn't make any judgments about Jim Jones. I mean, philosophically or anything, as a performance, not my job. My job is to play the man. In order to play him, I had to find things to like in him and to believe in the things that he was trying to do. And he certainly, in his childhood, was an idealistic and liberal man and believed in Christianity or religion and... tremendously, and Christianity as it is really in the Bible, not like we want it to be. In other words, there are no races. We are here to help one another. We're not here in church on Sunday to see and be seen and play a game. We're here to come together as human beings and share something.
When you're doing a role, specifically when you were doing this role, although you're saying you didn't try to make value judgments on Jim Jones, are the things that you carried beneath the surface, things that you wanted somehow to get a sense that he might be thinking, but you didn't want to telegraph it? Because everybody has layers. There's the layer that's on the surface, what we see and what we absolutely know about them, but you never know what someone's thinking, what their real deep motivations are. Did you have a deep sense that wasn't on the surface, but that you were thinking beneath it when you were doing the role?
Well, he says this in the film a few times, but I carried it all the way through, which was, to me, he had this tremendous inner strength to and desire to succeed. I will succeed. You know, I will be important in the world. And he was.
So what did you read and look at? You found footage of him? You heard the tapes?
There are a couple of men made a documentary when the church was in Ukiah, up in Redwood Valley, California. They went up and spent several weeks with him there and traveled with him down to San Francisco. They made it for CBS. I talked to them. I saw that footage. I saw a documentary that the People's Temple itself had made, which was, shall we say, slanted. Then I saw one that was made after the fact by a guy, I think his name is Marvin Miller. He teaches in seminaries. And the title of it was Deceived, which is a great metaphor for the whole thing. And the conclusion of it was, he talked about they were deceived in money, they were deceived in faith, they were deceived in family, all these things. And the conclusion of it was that why it's important, and the reason that it's important to know about the People's Temple and Jim Jones is that Jim Jones is closer to each of us than we realize. He wasn't just this devil person that was over there somewhere. He was very close. In the early days, he certainly could be any Protestant minister or church that you would walk into. And the people in the People's Temple were deceived. Spiritually, which is something that we all have inside us. And I think that's one of the things that made it so difficult for mankind to swallow. How could somebody who's supposed to be this wonderful religious leader do this and be that deceptive?
Can you talk a little bit more about how you made that make sense within the movie?
Ah, was I getting off the subject? Well, underneath it, I just tried to believe in what I was doing strongly. If I were manipulating people, I believed in that. If I was trying to get money, I believed in that. And by shooting the film in sequence, which we did fortunately, I was able to grow in the role from an idealistic young kid to an idealistic young minister to someone who was seeing the ideals and fade away and reality set in, to a very jaded individual who did not believe in any of that anymore. So underneath it, within myself, at first I just tried to keep the positation going and the brightness, the charm that he had, wonderful love of life that he had and of human beings. That was easy because I'm like that. And let that slowly change, subtly change. It's in the script. It, you know, I didn't have that much to worry about. And rather than making abrupt changes.
Did doing this role play any tricks on your head or your ego?
A bit, yeah. Because you're talking, I would never do anything like this. It put me in situations that were difficult to cope with, like betraying friends. In my personal life, I can't do that, and I really can't deal with people who do it to me. But it's make-believe as far as I'm concerned. You know, I'm pretending so I could do it. The whole issue with drugs and all that was hard to cope with, and watching my friends die.
Is that hard when you're in a movie?
Well, yeah. I mean, I had to disassociate myself from it pretty much. Yeah, you know you're in a movie, but the camera doesn't lie. You know, so if we're playing a scene, we believe we're telling the truth. Well, and when you believe that, it does things inside your head that if you're not skilled as a performer, you can lose it. And I was determined not to let that happen. Because I was in a physical, such a state of physical and emotional fatigue that I had no trouble playing paranoia. It was easy for me to think that people were out to get me. I don't know.
You worried that any of the reactions that people have to the real Jim Jones are going to be transferred onto you when they run into you in the street?
Oh, I haven't thought of it in those terms. I would hope people would know that I am an actor. I am certainly not him. And whether they're members of the People's Temple or their relatives or they're just normal citizens, I am not Jim Jones. I'm an actor.
I know that on soap operas, I think that's where that type of confusion is probably most strong, like when a character on a soap opera gets sick. And I mean, the character, not the actor or actress. A lot of people send flowers to the actor or actress. Yeah. There's an incredible confusion between the actor and the role that they play. And I know you've acted on one soap opera, so you might have a sense of that confusion.
Well, possibly. I hope not, because I've done, two other things have already been out, and then I just finished another movie for television that'll be on in the fall, and they're all quite different characters, so I would hope that I wouldn't be associated with one thing. I'm sure that people will say, because the film is so good and my performance, I hope, is good, that they will say, oh, yeah, it's certainly going to be the one that's going to put me into prominence. So I think that they'll go, oh, yeah, he's the guy who played Jim Jones, but I hope that I have enough other things going for me as a performer that I don't have to play Jim Jones the rest of my life.
What are some of the things you have to think about before doing a made-for-television movie? How is a made-for-television movie regarded in the industry?
Well, better and better. This one has a lot of style to it. I mean, if you look at the cast list, it's they're very fine actors there. The producer took great pain to cast it well and to get the right research going, because it is such a controversial issue. And if he wanted to make a quickie thing for television, he could have done it and probably made just as much money. I would not have participated, because it's not what I'm about. Again, that goes back to having read this script. That's why I would go ahead and do it. Because I didn't think it was exploitation, and I didn't think it was sensational. If we had gotten into the sadistic elements more, those horrible kinds of things that went on, then that would have been sensationalism.
Well, if you were a bad actor who was trying to really play the role to the hilt, what would you have done that you didn't do?
Oh, I would have overdone it. I would have emoted, as we say. But I didn't have to, because everybody was coming inside of me anyway, coming into that character. They wanted to see what was in there. And I would have made him at the end a raving lunatic, which he was not. I mean, if you hear the tape, you know that the man was not what our conception of a maniac is. He just wasn't.
Have you been following up the story now that the movie's over, or are you trying to remove yourself from Guyana?
Well, I've been trying to forget him, although I'm very proud of this work, and I think it's an important film, and I hope an informative film. I have a connection with, even if it's a spiritual one, with the survivors, the families. I understand it so much better now that I feel a compassion for the people very strongly, and I hope this film will inform the viewers so that they will have a degree of compassion for them. See, they had the survivors and the families of the people who died there had a terrible time readjusting back to society, both in the kind of deprogramming way. And then people on the outside treated them like lepers, as if they were all mad killers. And they are not, and were not. They were people like you or I, who believed in something and gave their lives to something and were deceived.
Are you going to be watching this on television next week?
I imagine, yeah. I imagine. I've not seen the final cut with the music and everything, but I probably will.
I don't know if this is a problem you'd run into with this movie or not, but there's a lot of lawsuits that have been leveled against the makers of movies where the movie uses a lot of proper nouns, whether it's the name of organizations or the names of people, of real people. What do you think the situation is going to be with this?
Well, there are no lawsuits happening now. It's a fact that most of the people involved are unfortunately no longer with us, so there can be no suits there. Many of the characters in the film are composites of several characters. For not only, I'm sure, legal reasons, but let's face it, we only had 4 hours to tell a lifetime, and we could have had 6 or 8 or 10. Because each family and each little individual who's involved, their story is really interesting and important. But there's only, you have to be selective. And that's why these composites came about.
There's a movie that was out a few weeks ago, and I know that you didn't see it because I asked you about this earlier, and I even forget the name of the movie, but it was a movie about the Guyana tragedy, and from what I hear, it was a pretty bad and pretty sensational movie. Do you think a lot of people are confusing the two?
They might. Yeah, that worries me some, because evidently, I mean, I didn't see it, right, but evidently it is fairly sensational. I don't know. I just read the reviews and what I've heard, and it deals mostly with the tragedy itself, and I think they had a lot of their facts mixed up, and that's, after all, I mean, they were in production shooting it within 3 months after it happened, so how factual can you be? Probably they will confuse it. This film focuses on Jim Jones from a boy to the end. It really is the story of him growing up and getting there, not the event. We know about that.
Did the person who played the young Jim Jones look anything like you did when you were young?
Yes, he did. Yeah? He was a very interesting kid. He was from Atlanta, where we shot most of the film. And he has an IQ of about 150. He's a karate expert. And this is the first time he had acted. And he's wonderful in the film. He came on the set, and they took a picture of us together as my eyes and everything. it was interesting.
I want to thank you very much for being here this afternoon, for telling us about your role in the movie. I've been speaking with Powers Booth, and next week you'll be able to see him on television portraying the role of Jim Jones in a made-for-television movie. The movie is scheduled for broadcast next Tuesday and Wednesday. I think it's Tuesday and Wednesday. It's the 15th and the 16th. It's on CBS affiliates here in Philadelphia. That's Channel 10, and the movie will start at 9 o'clock based on the Guyana incident. The movie's called Guyana Tragedy, the story of Jim Jones. In just a couple of minutes on Fresh Air, we're going to be hearing the background behind the book that another made-for-television movie is based on. The movie is called Nurse. It's based on the best-selling book Nurse. Nurse was written by Peggy Anderson, who's a Philadelphia-based writer, and its success transformed her from a very poor writer into a very successful writer. We'll be hearing from her in just a moment on Fresh Air. I just want to mention something for anyone who is tuning in today, hoping to hear from pianist and composer Jackie Byard. That broadcast with Jackie Byard has been delayed for a couple of weeks. We taped a session together. He was at the piano, and I was asking him about his approach to improvisation and composition. We'll be hearing that entire session on Friday, April 25th. But right now, this is a record featuring Jackie Byard at the piano.